Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are on paper 42, section 2, which is on old single column, page 469. All right. Last session we got started on paper 42 here. And remember, as they did at the beginning of paper 41, before they started burrowing in on the more direct scientific issues, they were giving us some of the bigger picture philosophic context that they wanted to make sure that we had. Before we attempted to unpack what in many cases, when you're dealing with parts of the Revelation that are getting into facts that are approaching or are, you know, at where we can engage those facts, they, you know, they have very strict limitations on what they can say. So you want to always be looking for the subtlest of clues. They're always, quote-unquote, suggesting, you know, when they're in that mode, suggesting as mightily as they can, hoping that you have ears to hear and will pick up on the suggestions. Of course, you know, the further away it is from any material, any issues in the universe of universes that we have any ability to get a hold of directly, you know, they're less in a suggesting mode and they're giving you things more directly. But you know, we are about to burrow in on the issues that eventually every mortal world develops a physics that goes all the way to down to the ultimate atomic level. So other than issues, you know, immediately preceding automatons, you know, remember they mentioned, as we read last time, the automaton, the first measurable form of energy. Okay, so, you know, except for those issues that are, you know, prior to measurable, you know, it very much is material that at least eventually we could, you know, figure out. So, like I said, you're wanting to be on your toes and trying to be using as much logical recognition and connecting the dots as you can as you engage this content. All right. Let's see. And you know, you'll see as we get going. Definitely, prior to automatons, there's very mysterious doings that even the revelators don't understand that have to do with beings, which are very, you know, directly involved. You know, it doesn't happen, you know, issues that don't happen in the slightest without direct action of beings. And remember, they were you know, reminding us of the power beings, and we have to, you know, not just think of directly the power beings, but the force organizers here too, you know, sort of those pre-power beings, if you will. So, so we, you know, mind made and personality managed, you know, is the universe in all ways, shapes, and forms. So we're going to try to combine, you know, a more direct physics with the action of beings. All right, let's get into it here.
Number two, universal non-spiritual energy systems, physical energies. It is indeed difficult to find suitable words in the English language whereby to designate and wherewith to describe the various levels of force and energy, physical, mindful, or spiritual. These narratives cannot altogether follow your accepted definitions of force, energy, and power. There is such paucity of language that we must use these terms in multiple meanings. In this paper, for example, the word energy is used to denote all phases and forms of phenomenal motion, action, and potential, while force is applied to the pre-gravity and power to the post-gravity stages of energy.
All right, so let's first of all get carefully pick through that. You notice they start out, more direct engagement of the physics with making sure you're on the correct page in terms of the definition of terms, just as they start the revelation. It's pointless to try to understand what you're reading, and silly to be arguing back and forth with a fellow reader about the meaning of something if you haven't first figured out what the primary terms mean. If you don't know what personality means, to argue endlessly about what the revelation is saying about personality is just silly. You've got to figure out what the revelatory definition of the words are, and then in that context, figure out what's going on, with those issues. So, force, energy, and power. Once they point out that you need to, let go of some simplistic, merely historical definition, no matter how valid that historical definition might be that we use, you need to generalize, take a hold of the truth that's flowing through our use of those words, and let them serve greater duty. And before they mentioned force, energy, power, they described the various levels of force and energy, physical, mental, and spiritual, right? Just that issue of using the word energy, for instance, in a threefold way. Physical energy, mindal energy, spiritual energy, or the word energy overarching all three of those, right? Now you notice in the title of the section, and of course the title of the paper too. In this paper, we're not going to directly engage the physics of spirit substance, okay? But mind energy, and immediately right now, physical energy very much so. Okay, so focusing in on the physical energies, the parenthetical in the title, physical energies, one way you can think of why that's plural is an overarching use of the word energy and then a specific use within that general sense of force on the one hand, and then energy being used again in a specific mode, and then power. Okay, now what's the basic difference? Well, you notice they mentioned, they want you to think about how we use those words. Okay, so think about a basic situation where you're going to make something move. You're going to set an object in motion so that when it's in motion, it has what we call kinetic energy, a way that we use that word energy. If I'm going to do that, I'm going to have to apply a force to that object. That's the way we think about that situation. We think of this, this is just a static object, and I'm going to make it move. So I apply a force to it. And so the force precedes the actualization of this kinetic energy when it's moving. See, so force has a precursor relation to our use of energy. So that's why they're going to use it in that precursor sense, where force is more of a potential for energy. See, so it's the spirit of the way we use those, but not the specifics. We're not talking about F equals MA sort of force, right? Or gravitational force or something like that. But in this pre-energy, and you notice at the end there, force is applied to pre-gravity. So, there must be some point when gravity kicks in You know, and this potential, this force is prior to that. Okay, so that gives you the way they're using the contrast between the word force and the word energy. Now the word power. I mean, think about when we use the word power. Now, I mean, technically, power is just energy per unit time. You know, as a physical quantity. But what's going on when you're using that concept of power? You're using energy. Well, towards some end, over a certain amount of time. And you're describing that use of energy per unit of time. See, the use of energy. You have a purpose in your head. And you're going to use energy to achieve that purpose. See, so power, in the way we use it in contrast to just energy, brings in this idea of using it, of purposing energy. Right? Power is purposed energy. Right? See, so that's, they're just taking that spirit of when, how we use that quantity. And so now, see, so we have a threefold, that's kind of a potential, actual, real, potentiality, actuality, reality, force, energy, power. But we're also using energy in an overarching sense as well, for all three. And in a general sense, this as they continue on, in this paper, for example, the word energy is used to denote all phases and forms. Okay, so they're reminding you of using it in the very general sense, that overarching sense. And then they say all phases and forms of phenomenal motion, action, and potential. They put the word motion up front. Okay, most fundamentally, this universe of physical energy phenomena is a universe of motion. Everything is a motion. And so motion is the most general designation in play. That's why they put it up front. And then two words after, one of which is action. Okay, a person acts. Our personal being, a personalized deity even, right? A personal being acts, could purpose energy. So you see the contrast is, motion, energy, two different ways of describing the basic fact. And we talked about before, if you say energy, you're saying there's a differential, okay? Another way to recognize what that fact is, besides being some embodiment of a differential, some manifestation of a differential, is that it's a motion. Okay. Now, if you have power, if you have purposed energy, that resulted from action. I see, so motion or, kind of that purposed motion, action, or just the potential. So it's kind of another way of saying energy, power, force, in that order, to say motion, action, potential. But, focusing on a little different aspect of the phenomenon. Right? All right, and so you see, not only is force, as I'm saying, the prior term, power is going to be, the post term. When you get fully to something, a physical phenomenon that has a property that we call mass, when it's that fully actualized, they're revealing to you that we don't recognize, it's also purposed very definitively at that point. That is very much purposed energy. And, when it has mass, it is, fully in the grasp of what we call gravity, right? So, post-gravity, the post-onset of gravity, not somehow, there's not gravity anymore, but the pre-gravity, pre-post-gravity, but they mean that, prior to gravity of some form, absolute or linear, kicking in, and then the manifestations of energy you know, in that gravity influence, there's a good word, gravity influence domain. Okay. All right. So that's that's the basics. So you just, you know, if you have any physics training, you know, or if, even if you really remember your physics from high school or something like that, you need to remember, okay, don't think simplistically about force, energy, power. Use it in, you know, we're revealing truth. See, so you're using the truth inherent in those three words, not the mere fact, you know, especially the mere evolutionary, historical, factual sense of those words, right? You're using them as a means of revealing truth, not merely disclosing fact. You're always trying to figure out the truth first and then trying to see what you can do about a recognition of the facts. All right, that's a little preface here.
I will, however, endeavor to lessen conceptual confusion by suggesting the advisability of adopting the following classification for cosmic force, emergent energy, and universe power, physical energy.
Right, so you see right there, you can see, you know, the physical energy finally is an overarching designation for the three before. Notice just what I was saying you might find. Suggesting, you know, and advising, you know, the advisability, right? So you don't want to, you know, grab the granite and the hammer and the chisel. You want to be in an open mode of reflecting on their suggestions and putting the pieces together. You know, we'll see, even as we start out, where you're thinking, well, couldn't they just tell me those things very directly? I'm going to show you how to unpack something, and the fact that I can do that means they couldn't say that directly. It's our job to put the pieces together and discover what we're going to go through tonight. They only tell you what you, there's no way for you to get in any reasonable sense of that, you know, on your own. The rest you've got to do yourself. You got to be ready to do something as well as be something. You can't just be someone who's feeling the words, okay? You got to be doing something with the revelation. It's asking an awful lot of lowly animal origin creatures like we are. Now, the one little thing, you know, as you glance down to item number two, you see primordial force. You know, and right here they said cosmic force, emergent energy, and universe power. Sometimes, instead of saying primordial force or the force charge of space, they will use that designation cosmic force. When they use the word cosmos, or especially if they're using the adjective cosmic, you need to ask yourself, now, do I want the extensive or the intensive interpretation of cosmic? Do I want to be thinking about the universal harmony, or should I be thinking about the harmonizing universe here? You know, when they're talking about physical energy and they use cosmic, like cosmic force, okay, they mean the harmonizing universe force, the cosmic force. Yeah.
Is that anything like before and after? No.
It's like the difference between quantity and quality more than before and after. You know, there's the extensive, you know, see the quantity-like aspect of the word cosmos, the harmonizing universe. But then there's a quality to that harmonizing universe, the universal harmony. And you notice it's not universalizing harmony. It's just universe harmony, period. It exists. You don't have to wait for it. But from a temporal and from a time viewpoint, you have to wait for a harmonizing universe. You know, quantitatively, in that literal, factual way, it's not all there yet. It's not done yet. Okay, but so if you say primordial force, you're very much invoking the sequence of actualization. You know, something is, you know, at the very beginning, the first of the very beginning things, it's primordial, right? See, so you're thinking about some sequence. But if you don't want to really invoke the sequence, if you just want to point to the fact of, you know, there's cosmic force present in this room, you know, and you're not thinking about taking it somewhere, evolving it more, you know, you're just wanting to think about its, you know, its nature, the nature of its existence, you know, you could call it cosmic force then. That harmonizing universe's force presence. Okay? All right. So that's the gist of that. Okay, so now we are going to, you know, do the sequence. Okay? They're going to take us from something that's even more potential than force's potential to something that is very much pure potential and go forward from there. Okay? So let's see how they suggest to us.
Number one, space potency. This is the unquestioned free space presence of the unqualified absolute. The extension of this concept connotes the universe force space potential inherent in the functional totality of the unqualified absolute. While the intention of this concept implies the totality of cosmic reality, universes, which emanated eternity-wise from the never-beginning, never-ending, never-moving, never-changing Isle of Paradise.
Okay. These paragraphs are all very laden, okay, and you need to step through it.
Seriously.
Okay. Right. It'll be an effort to do this one section in 2 hours here. Okay, so space potency. Potency, obviously, you know, potential, okay? And it's a potential, they're saying, is spread out in some way relative to space. Okay? When they're talking about the space presence of the unqualified absolute, okay, remember from just, you know, your basic seven absolutes of infinity, individuality viewpoint, the unqualified absolute, one of those seven absolutes, that's the reservoir of the potential for material substance or energy. You know, it's just a reservoir of potential. It's a pure potentiality. I mean, only, you know, in eternity, where there's no difference between actuality and potentiality, can you think of it as an actuality. Temporally, it's pure potentiality, okay? It's this, and so that when you think about the presence of that fact in relationship to space, it's space potency, okay? So it is, you know, just very literally, you know, the presence of the unqualified absolute, something that is certainly not measurable in any way, even by, you know, all these revelators, okay? And because it's not tangible, not measurable in any way, that's why it says unquestioned free space, okay? I mean, what's, you know, why, you're going, well, I mean, is there like people that are, you know, that have to be suppressed, you know, so that this doesn't get questioned, you know? Is this like, it's forbidden to ask certain questions? Is that what they mean by unquestioned? No, they mean that it is it is an absolute must, logically. If you are a logical thinker, there is no way to, you know, doubt the existence of this. It must exist, or nothing could logically be. Fundamentally, because you know there's actualities. And you can't have something coming from nothing, right? Something has to come from something else. Nothing comes from nothing, You know, that's why the Big Bang is so, you know, fundamentally illogical. You know, to assume that something, everything, comes from nothing is absurd. Okay, it's by definition not even worth thinking after the first 2 seconds. Okay, the whole idea is false by definition. Right, right. If there has to be a something from which another something comes from. From which another something comes. Right, so that's what they mean. So it's the unquestioned free space presence, so the unqualified absolute. Free space. So where are they starting us here? When we're in the domain of the master universe where we are, is that free space? No, there's all kinds of, you know, objects like me floating around in this space and, you know, all kinds of debris. If I'm really going to start in a, you know, where they seem to be starting me, the only space that's free, completely free, are the reservoir spaces, right? Above and below the aisle, those conical, you know, regions above and below where there isn't anything. So that they're starting us there. Remember there's, you have unpervaded space, you know, above and below, and then pervaded space out, you know, laterally from the aisle, flaring out deeper and deeper the farther you go out, you know, Maltese, you know, cross image. Okay, so they're wanting us to initially think about space potency there in the reservoir space, in the unpervaded space. Okay, and then they say the extension of this concept. And you know, later they said intention. Remember, I was even using extension, intention, contrast when I was talking about cosmos. Two different ways of thinking about the word cosmos. So they're saying there's two different ways to think about space potency, extensively and intensively. Same idea. Okay, now for those of you who, you know a little bit about deity, if you, from the individuality viewpoint, you have the unqualified absolute. From the unity viewpoint, or the deity, in the deity perspective, you have which facet of deity on the other side of the unqualified absolute? The infinite capacity, right? The infinite capacity, the little label that you recognize for it is that which extends, okay? The moment that you see the extension, right, okay, you should be thinking, ah, yes, that which extends, the facet of deity called the infinite capacity. And you go, the extension of this concept connotes the universe force, space, potential inherent in the functional totality of the unqualified absolute. Reservoirs don't function. Facets of deity function. Right? See, so they're reminding you of, you know, what's, you know, how to under, you know, what's going on in the deity perspective as well. You know, and the word extension you know, gives that clue. Now you notice there they said force hyphen space. Hey, they don't do it that way very often. You know, you'll often have space hyphen energy, space hyphen force, you know, where they're reminding you of the space you know, dispersion of this phenomenon, you know, that it's spread out in some way across space. But here they have it the other way, force hyphen space, space being the foundational element. That's because we want to really think about, we're starting with space, and then we're going to build upon that foundation. And the first thing that's going to be built upon that foundation is force. That's why they said it this way. Okay? And we're trying to get to the point where we can build that. You know, we're thinking about the precursor of building something upon space, upon the foundation of space as a literal fact. Remember, space is a is not just a concept, it's a literal thing. Okay, we're going to build upon and with that thing, that stuff. Okay, and then while the intention of this concept implies the totality of cosmic reality, universes, I mean, you know, there's an intent. You know, this is going somewhere. There isn't a potential just for the sake of the eternalness of a potential. A potential exists to be actualized and then realized, you know, as a purpose, right? There's an intention. And in, you know, and if you want to get really specific, thinking about how the intention, you know, is in the mind, you know, that mind planned, mind made, mind administered, right? Okay. All right. And then it really gets really fun. And they say, so after universes which emanated eternity-wise from the never-beginning, never-ending, never-moving, never-changing Isle of Paradise. You know, pounding in all of the, don't think of paradise like that or that or that, you know. That motionless, absolute center of all physical phenomena, the Isle of Paradise. Okay, and they say it emanated eternity-wise. All right. I mentioned deity. Tonight we're going to actually want to think about the seven functional levels of total deity going around the infinite eternal ellipse here. We're going through seven categories. They line up with the seven functional levels of total deity. We're not going to, treat the deity directly, but we want to recognize what this sevenfold sequence we're going to go through is parallel to. Okay? The space potency, the second functional level of total deity here, level two, and then we have this level two domain here, this wedge off to the upper left in the chart of the infinite eternal ellipse of total deity. For those of you on the webinar, if you need to pull out your infinite eternal ellipse as well. That second functional level domain there, number two, is the potential level. We're talking about space potency, right? Okay, so, parallel with all the deity stuff that's on the chart here, parallel with the second level domain is this space potency, parallel with the potential level. Yeah. What else would it be parallel to? And then they say it goes, we're going to go eternity-wise. So are we going to go, clockwise or counterclockwise around this ellipse? Okay, well, the way that you can figure out which way is eternity-wise is, over here in the sixth and seventh functional levels, you see you have the supreme and the ultimate. And you're going, I know I'm going eternity-wise when I go from the supreme to the ultimate. So if I'm going counterclockwise around the chart here, I'm going eternity-wise. Okay, if you go clockwise, you're going infinity-wise. You go counterclockwise, you're going eternity-wise. Okay, so we're going to start with level two and move around counterclockwise, parallel to the functional levels of total deity. That's what they are wanting you to invoke. And you'll see that when they get a little further down the sequence, it's very definitive that they're wanting you to have figured out the chart, the infinite eternal ellipse, in order to properly appreciate what they're talking about. And they start referring to levels and, All right, so, the bit about eternity-wise from... Right, the Paradise Isle is in the first functional level. So, if we face towards level three, here we're sitting in level two, and we face towards three to our back. What are we going from? We're moving away from the aisle there in the first functional level. Yeah.
The chart that you have is the infinite eternal ellipse of total deity.
Yep, the infinite eternal ellipse of total deity is in the Perfecting Horizons library. If you don't have one in front of you, there's three charts that I always have to my side here. And, if you're a student of Perfecting Horizons on Friday night, you should also have those three charts to your, close at hand all the time. The infinite eternal ellipse of total deity, the threefold actuality with unity chart, and the seven, the psychic circles and the sevenfold chart. Those are the three main charts that we often want to refer to understand, visually a little bit more what they're talking about.
And the recording is in there also under audio.
Mm-hmm. All right.
One more question.
Okay.
How did Dr. Chris define intention?
Oh, well, I mean, think of a simple way of kind of picturing why you have the word. You have a tension that's inward and a tension that's outward. So you have an extension and an intention. You know, and the extending something, okay, that seems pretty straightforward. But, you know, when I say, when I'm intending something, you know, why in? You form a concept and you bring it inward to a focus point as an intent, you know? You've brought it to a focus, this line of intent in your mind. You know, see, it's a tension. See, so there's a line, you know, a tension line. But you've achieved that by focalizing inward. Okay? It's an intention. That's why, you know, humans reflecting on their intellectual process coined these words to express the truth of what they could, you know, intuitively understand was going on. Right? They were intending, okay? They were bringing things inward to a focus, all right? And like I said, I mean, you know, a lot of times you can kind of think extent intent in that order. There's a measure of quantity quality, you know, that, you know, might help you to appreciate the contrast, you know, in play between, you know, the what something means extensively and what something means intensively. All right.
Can I just take 5 seconds?
Well,
you can see the upper end.
Yeah, remember the hour. I mean, maybe this is a simple thing that people can picture. Just, you know, if you picture an hourglass, you know, if you go back and, you know, think about when they introduce that, they say, you know, one way you could help to think about it is think about an hourglass. And so everything inside of the hourglass is this a reservoir space, you know, and then what's on the outside, you know, of the V's, you know, all the way around of that hourglass, you know, that's pervaded space. That's where all the galaxies are. That's where we are. You know? So there's the hourglass reservoir, and then that which is lateral, you know, to the side of that hourglass. Okay.
The phenomena indigenous to the nether side of paradise probably embrace 3 zones of absolute force presence and performance: the fulcral zone of the unqualified absolute, the zone of the Isle of Paradise itself, and the intervening zone of certain unidentified equalizing and compensating agencies or functions. These concentric zones are the centrum of the paradise cycle of cosmic reality.
Okay, now that, you know, they're just trying to get you to go back and, you know, for the full picture, reminding you of the section on nether paradise, you know, so that you, for the full picture, you go back there, you can reread that section, remember how it works on nether paradise. Personalities can't actually go to nether paradise, right? And so that's why they say the phenomena indigenous to the nether side of paradise probably embrace, right? I mean, because no one has actually gone there to, you know, to directly visually confirm, right? So that's, you know, if you're wondering why are they saying probably? You know, isn't it all stated pretty definitively up there in the nether paradise section? Just reminding you of that, that they had to be told this by someone. They haven't checked it out themselves. You know, and they're always very conservative about that. They just don't believe any old thing they hear, right? Unless they just have no choice but to take someone's word for it, because you can't go there, right? Otherwise, they would have been all over it with tape measures and gauges and, you know, and checking it all out. All right, you know, so remember there's on the other paradise, at the very center, directly under the deity presences on the upper side of paradise, and in the very center of another paradise, as we talked about when we went through another paradise, you finally understand the paradise trinity and the full deity nature and stuff. That's the location of the individuality of the paradise trinity. The co-infinite one stands there. not a person. No person's on the nether side. But that's what's at the very center. The functioning of the Paradise Trinity is what, you know, encompasses the three deity presences on the top. There's the functioning of the Paradise Trinity on the top in relationship to the deity and personalized deity. But the literal non-personal individuality is there at the center. And surrounding that is the source region for space itself. And then surrounding that are these, is this triconcentric zone. That third zone out is a threefold zone itself and has a part, first part that's related to paradise itself, an outer part that's related to the focalization point of the unqualified absolute and the force charge of space, and then the intermediate equalizing and compensating zone that they mentioned there. Okay. So, you know, they're reminding you of that because, as I just said, that's where you want to think of starting your journey, in a sense, at least conceptually, away from the aisle, is that region, another paradise. It's a center, but it's not just a point. So they called it a centrum, just to, you know, to help you think of a center that's a whole region and not just literally like a like the center of a Cartesian coordinate system or something, you know, a literal point like center. I mean, centrum just means center, but they're using the centrum word instead of center so that you're reminded that it's an vast extended region, okay, in which all of these mysterious things are happening. Okay, let's see. I think that's all that we need right here. Other than, you know, I use the word focalization zone. You see, they have the fulcral zone of the unqualified absolute. You know, thinking of that as a domain where a certain phenomenon is focalized, one way of speaking of it. It's also a fulcrum point. You know, there's going to be something we're going to be talking about that is on the two sides of that. You know, there's you're leveraging back and forth across that fulcrum. Okay? All right, let's get the rest of it here.
Space potency is a pre-reality. It is the domain of the unqualified absolute and is responsive only to the personal grasp of the universal father. Notwithstanding that it is seemingly modifiable by the presence of the primary master force organizers. On Uversa, space potency is spoken of as absoluta.
Okay, now we're starting to get into a little bit more of the nitty-gritty here. Okay, I mean, you know, in every way that even very high finite beings, you know, can think about this space potency, it's not a poke-poke reality, you know, some sort of a thing that someone can measure and poke and whatnot, okay? It's a pre-reality. It's pre-thing. But it is a literal fact from which things come. It's not a nothing, but it's not in any way tangible thing. Okay, so that's what they mean by space potency is a pre-reality, right? I mean, it's just the presence of the unqualified absolute. Okay, and then they say, it is the domain of the unqualified absolute and is responsive only to the personal grasp of the universal father. So, starting you with the seven absolutes of infinity picture and something that you can understand, you know that it's a reservoir of the potential for material substance. The eternal Son, the absolute spirit, doesn't directly relate to, you know, matter. The aisle does, okay, but the eternal Son doesn't. You know, and when we think of the third source and center in this mode, the absolute mind, you know, that individual is relating to mind. You know, so one of them is relating to spirit, another is relating to mind. You know, so you know, you have these three infinite persons. You only have one left that might you might be able to understand as having some sort of direct relationship to the unqualified absolute. In the full sense, it's not the universal father, it's the universal controller, you know, talking about the first source and center as the universal controller, having a relationship to the Isle of Paradise, and through that having a relationship to all things physical. Or you could think kind of way in, you know, in the conceptual beginning was the I am, and that initial relationship between what you start to call the first source and center, you know, and the one side of that which you bifurcated, you know, the unqualified absolute, see there being a relationship there. That's not, you know, the eternal Son doesn't have that kind of a relationship, or the infinite spirit or the conjoint actor doesn't. I mean, so a number of ways you can look at it. You can see that the only being, of the three infinite persons, it's close in some sense, is the universal father, quote unquote, you know, or the universal controller, if you will. So that's why they're saying that, you know. See, and you notice it is responsive only to the personal grasp. See, like, you know, of the three persons, which one can you kind of picture maybe before you understand deity and stuff is having a relationship to this and manipulating it in some way? But then, you know, they throw in, notwithstanding, that it is seemingly modifiable by the presence of the primary master force organizers, who aren't the universal father or the universal controller. They use that word absoluta. We'll get to the details of that in a second, but, you know, obviously it's related to the word absolute in some way. So, you know, we're talking, and it's the unqualified absolute. We're talking about someone or something being able to do something with an absolute fact. Well, it's not going to be a sub-absolute being. So you go, oh yeah, I can understand. You know, we think about these three absolute persons. And it's that one of the three absolute persons that could do something as a person with this absolute fact. But there's another way that instead of just being an absolute that has permission to engage it, what if there's a super absolute fact in play? What if there is a co-infinite fact? You know, we've pointed this out. There are aspects of reality that embody co-infinite nature. We know that they moved us out on Nether Paradise, out to the fulcral zone here, and we know what's at the center there, the co-infinite one. Okay. I'll bet you behind the scenes, if you really move away from the seven absolutes of infinity picture and try to start understanding this more directly synchronized with deity, like we were just, you know, pointing out on the chart there, the Paradise Trinity is involved very intimately here. After all, Paradise Trinity is the only facet of deity that directly engages reality. And there's a co-infinite nature there. You know, something that's above absolute things, you know, could certainly grab a hold of it and do something with it. And if the Paradise Trinity had something to do with bringing primary master force organizers into existence, you know, there could be some bequeathing of co-infinite nature, you know, where they function in the Trinity's stead. Okay? The very fact, as we're about to explain in more detail, that the primary master force organizers can modify absoluta, they've got to have some way to do that. Okay, they're doing it because they embody, like some of these other power beings and stuff, some co-infinite, some super absolute nature that allows them from the top down to take a hold of absolute things and say, you're not going to be like this anymore, you're going to be like this. I'm going to modify you. You know, I'm going to super absolute, you know, you. I'm going to trump you as an absolute fact. All right. And that's really the, you know, you're wanting to move away from some fancy monotheistic universal father, you know, that's manipulating stuff. I mean, fundamentally, it's not the father that's involved in actualizing energy here. okay? It's the force organizers and the power beings, and they're doing it very much in relationship to that facet of deity called the Paradise Trinity. Okay, now, the last thing they say, Anuversa space potency is spoken of as absoluta. Absoluta is a Latin word. Does that mean they speak Latin, Anuversa? Okay, no more than, day to day they speak English. All these other English words that they've coined and stuff, you know. No one on on Salvington is calling it Salvington. Right? They don't speak in English on Salvington, okay? That's an English word for our benefit. It has some designation in the local universe tongue and the super universe tongue that doesn't sound like a sequence of Latin letters, Salvington, okay? Right, they don't speak Latin on Universa, but they are giving you a Latin word here. What are they doing? In Latin, you have a threefoldness to past participles. You have a stem, and then you have three different suffixes to give you a masculine, a feminine, and a neuter version of a past participle. You have absolutus, absoluta, absolutum. Right? US, A, and UM. Absolutus, absoluta, absolutum. They're using the second one, the feminine, the absoluta, there. Now, when we took Latin into English, I mean, we have the word absolute. That adjective, the word absolute in English, is just an Englishization of the first of those three past participles, absolutus. So, I mean, when you see the word absolute, what you're really seeing is absolutus turned into an English word. Okay? The revelators also use the neuter one, absolutum. Yeah, I mean, they use absolutum to designate the substance of the isle. And one of the ways they designate what the isle is made out of, the material stuff that the isle is made out of. They use the word absolute, means they're actually kind of using the word absolutus, and they use the word absolutum directly, and now they're going to use the third. They're going to use all three of them, see, really. They're going to use absoluta. Now, the distinction is the feminine means that it's inherently absolute. The masculine, absolutus, means it's directed to absoluteness. You know, it's like motus and mota. You know, they use mota. It means it's inherently motion, not directed, to being in motion. Okay, which is motus. Right? They use the Latin past participles, as gerunds there as well. So what they're saying is think of something you're going to call absoluta, something that's inherently absolute, something that's very directly the free space presence of the unqualified absolute. And the only place that you have that is in the reservoir space. That's where you have the pure space potency, or the purest potential, the absoluta. Absoluta passes through the presence of the primary master force organizers and is modified. You may recall, way back, when we were talking about this some, they talked about not only spoke of unpervaded space and pervaded space, but they used a little different twist on that. One time they talked about non-pervadable space in contrast to pervadable space. Right? That's the modification we're talking about here. The primary master force organizers are taking non-pervadable space and turning it into pervadable space. That difference is this modification of the presence of the unqualified absolute. Okay, in the reservoir space, in that those unpervaded space reservoirs, you have space. Yeah, that stuff filling that volume, that domain, and you have pervading it. Okay, I mean, it's called unpervaded space because it's not pervaded by the force charge. Okay, but it is pervaded by the presence of the unqualified absolute, literally, directly, as absoluta, as an immediate absolute fact. So you have space, which is co-absolute, being pervaded by that which is directly, inherently absolute. Okay, that locks it down. You pervade that co-absoluteness by that absoluteness, and that co-absoluteness, is subject to its stasis. There cannot be motion in those reservoir spaces because it's locked down by the trump card, right, of the absoluta that's there. The space cannot get involved in any sort of a thing so that there can be motion because it's locked down by absoluta. Okay, it passes through the presence of the primary master force organizers and comes out into horizontal space, modified. What's out here is not technically absoluta. It's not an immediate absolute presence. It's a co-absolute presence. They have downstepped absoluta into a co-absolute presence, an absolute presence into a co-absolute presence. And you could actually bring in the other the masculine past participle here, that directed to absoluteness. I mean, that's kind of what co-absolute is. Think of you finally getting into the endless cycles of eternity as something that is engaged in co-absoluteness. You've been directed into relationship with absoluteness. You are co-absolute. So if you wanted, you could call it absoluta and then modified as absolutus. Modifying the absoluta into absolutus. Something that's been directed by their presence. Okay? It's very much directed to absoluteness. It's co-absolute. Okay? But it's, you no longer have space locked down. You now have two co-absolute things side by side, not something above the co-absolute space locking it down. You have something to, so you have co-absolute, co-absolute. You have the co-absoluteness of space and the co-absoluteness of this modified space potency. Okay? And that now is a primed potential that we're going to do something with. Okay? The motionless that is the aisle. In the reservoir space, see, that motionlessness is extended out into reservoir space. That free space presence of the unqualified absolute, that absoluta, extends the motionlessness of paradise out through the reservoir space. So it too is motionless. That which extends, you've extended that into the reservoir space, that absoluta. Absolutely cannot move because what's immediately there is inherently absolute. So it has the final word, and it is stasis, right? But we've modified that. We don't have absolute stasis anymore. Something is astir. What happens? When it passes through those primary force organizers, relative to that fulcrum point. See, we have a, right now, remember the cycles of expansion and contraction. Right now, reservoir space is coming in and pervaded space is going out. We're leveraging off that fulcrum, taking unpervadable space and turning it into pervadable space. On the other side of the cycle, it'll be going the other way. See, so they can take this, put the toothpaste back in the tube, right? they can do this. They can take that co-absolute thing and turn it back into an absolute thing. Take the absolutus and turn it back into absoluta. And what else is happening when, you know, if you picture him doing that? Okay, that's where we go next, is what you're going to do now that you've modified absoluta into a co-absolute presence. Okay. Oh, you got something first?
Yeah. The they that you're referring to are the master force organizers.
The primary master force organizers. And you'll see them refer to this again after this item number two.
So why go to all the trouble to change it all and then change back?
No one knows that. The revelators don't understand why there's respiration. If you want to think about, the fact that you call it respiration, you're going, well, you know, figuratively, who's breathing?
Paradise.
Okay. It's a space respiration, remember. No, paradise is motionless. Paradise can't breathe. Right? Remember, it's literally the space, you know, that's going in and out. Has an outward and an inward nature, cyclically. At the center is the co-infinite one. Surrounding that is the source, the focalization region of space itself. And then surrounding that's what we're talking about. What's the space that's breathing is right next to whom? What? The co-infinite one. If you want to think of it most literally, it's the co-infinite one breathing. The Paradise Trinity's breathing. Why? No one knows. But that's who's breathing. It's not the Father breathing. It's not the Son breathing. It's not the Spirit breathing. It's the Paradise Trinity breathing. You know, and that breath looks like space itself going out and in. Okay? That co-absolute fact is being breathed by a co-infinite one. Because it's, think about it, just, it puts it out, it's a downstepping, coming out, it's not literally within the co-infiniteness, it's being put out, and so if you're going to think about it, it's like, well, where does it go? There is some mystery of relationship to the co-infinite there, but just, see, in a simple sense of trying to begin to motivate this a little bit in your mind, what's going on? All right.
2, primordial force. This represents the first basic change in space potency and may be one of the nether paradise functions of the unqualified absolute. We know that the space presence going out from nether paradise is modified in some manner from that which is incoming. But regardless of any such possible relationships, the openly recognized transmutation of space potency into primordial force is the primary differentiating function of the tension presence of the living paradise force organizers.
Okay, so they're kind of just, I've already kind of said all of that as I've been explaining this. But let's think about what you have going on here now. Before, there couldn't be any motion. Remember, that's we're interested in energy, and as we set up in the first paragraph, we're looking for motion. There can't be motion when you have absoluta present, but we've modified that into, shall we say, absolutus, this co-absolute presence. Okay, now space is not locked down. You have two co-absolute facts in immediate relationship, juxtaposition. There's going to be a super-additive consequence. Those two things can relate. They're of the same order, co-absolute. Okay, there's going to be a super-additive consequence to that relationship. And super-additive here, remember, we're going top down. So the the transcendent is going from co-absolute to absonite. Absonite is, you know, is a super additive consequence of a co-absolute relationship when we're thinking like this. You know, remember that's, you know, if you think of starting in an existential absolute domain, the finite is the apex of super additive consequence. You know, if you start there as a creator son and you do all kinds of things that are, you know, have a super additive consequence and you do them and you do them until you reach the apex, where are you? Down to the scourging. You know, from our perspective, it's down to the scourging and the crucifixion. But from his perspective, it's super additive. It's going, he's going up and up and up from his absolute starting point through absonite and to a pinnacle of what we call lowly finite, which is actually the highest of all. Right? See, so we're doing that. We have two co-absolute facts that can have a super additive consequence of an absonite manifestation. Okay? We've got primordial force. It's a motion. Right? In the overarching sense, it's an energy. Right? It's a differential. It's a motion. Okay, how can we understand how it's a differential directly? And how there could be something that we would want to describe as a motion in some direct sense? Okay. Before we got to this, they reminded us, you know, the automaton, the first measurable form of energy, has paradise as its nucleus. The previous section. Remember, we got that philosophic point in place where we appreciate that throughout space, at every point, this point, you know, an infinite number of points in space, there is the centering influence of the aisle. Is located here and here and here and here and here and here and here, you know, at every point is the centering influence of the aisle. An absolute centering influence. That's all the aisle can do, is be absolute. Right? So that's an absolute centering influence point. Just pick any point, okay, and there's an absolute centering influence point. And that's surrounded by this pervading presence of a co-absolute. This absolutus, you know, as we're now calling it. You have a differential between absolute and co-absolute. In the reservoir space, you didn't have a differential. You had the absolute, I mean, the Isle of Paradise is an absolute centering influence everywhere up there, too, or down there. You know, everywhere in reservoir space, every point is an absolute centering influence. And right next to it is absoluta. There's no differential. Absolute, absolute, there's no differential. We have a differential. We have an energy. The differential between the absolute point of the aisle and the co-absolute presence of this modified space potency. Okay? There's a differential. There's an energy now. Okay? And why is it a motion? We're talking about a reality differential. You have an absolute on one side of the differential and a co-absolute on the other side. There's a quote-unquote reality pressure, okay, which is, you know, which is the greater side, the absolute side, okay. So there's going to be it's going to manifest as a motion outward from the absolute centering influence point out into the surrounding co-absoluteness. It's going to be an outward motion. That differential is going to manifest as a motion driven, if you will, by a reality pressure. The differential of reality between absoluteness and co-absoluteness. Okay? The force charge of space, when we engage it as a physics fact, it's observable as an outward scalar motion. It's not a vectorial motion, it's a scalar motion, because there's not just one point in space where the centering influence of the aisle is. Every point is. It's outward from every point, not just one point. So it's not like you have vectors going out from a point. It's not a vectorial motion. It's a scalar motion. It's it's outward from every point simultaneously, equally. See, so it's just outward or inward. Okay? This kind of scalar motion. It's scalar because it's transcendent. If it's vectorial, it's a finite motion. Okay? This is an absonite motion. It's transcendent. It's going to manifest from a finite point of view as a scalar phenomenon, not as a vectorial phenomenon. Okay? That's what it means to be finite, to have a space-time, nature. Okay, this is transcendent of that. It's a motion that's not a function of space or time. Okay? The only way we can observe it, since we can't directly measure the force charge, the primordial force, if there's a massless particle that we can measure, which is just like a marker dot on the force charge. Now, you can measure that particle and watch it move. It's like it moves at a uniform speed outward, that what we call the speed of light. It's the speed of this motion of the primordial force. That motion that results from the reality pressure differential between the absoluteness of the centering point of the aisle and the co-absoluteness of the modified space potency. That is the motion that is the primordial force. And so think about what you've done. You've taken absoluta and you've turned it into this primordial force that's not going to pervade space. You've turned it into an absonite presence and a co-absolute presence. If you think about it going backward the other direction, when things are contracting in inhabited space here, you're taking the you have a co-absolute thing and you'd like to get back up to an absolute thing. You need to add a little icing on top of that. Add that absonite stuff on top of the co-absolute and then you have the absolute. See, put the co-absoluteness and the absoniteness back together again and then you have absoluta. Pull the absolute apart and you have co-absoluteness and absoniteness, two pervading presences. And because this absolute, the absoluta and the absolutus is all very pre, that's not what you mean by pervaded space, right? It's only when you have the force charge, that absonite ubiquity, that you call it pervaded space. But technically, the space potency is pervading as well. Okay, now it's the tricky thing is you've got another player here. You have the space itself. Okay, that motion involves the space itself. Okay, the space is an element of that motion. And that's why, see, if you think about the superadditive consequence of the relationship between that co-absolute presence and the co-absoluteness of space itself, then obviously space is going to feed into the superadditive consequence, this absonite motion. Okay? There's not only the actualizing of the potential, as it were, of the unqualified absolute, but there's the incorporating of the space into the resultant phenomenon. Okay? A physical phenomenon is a motion, and one of the elements of that motion is space itself. Okay, the chronicity of motion is time, and you can kind of think of the space as being a little bit more like of the substance that is being utilized. A motion like an automaton. Literally occupies space. It's utilizing the space to be what it is. It's part of the motion that it is. Okay? It's a property of it. Okay? That space is a property of that motion. And even this motion, this primordial force, this very not individuated sort of motion, but a motion nonetheless, okay? Space is a property of it. And you can just see that, literally, it's going to be incorporated into it when you think of it as a superadditive consequence of the relationship between the co-absolute space and the co-absolute modified space potency. Okay? Okay, so that's the way you can unpack that. That's what's going on. Okay, and so you always, the background of all physical phenomena is this outward motion that is primordial force. That's the starting point, not zero. The starting point is unit motion, you know, unity of motion, one, not zero. You know, you start with the speed of light. You know, you don't speed up to the speed of light. You slow down from, you know, the speed of light. Okay? You know, that's why it's not, well, why do you stop there? Why can't you go with the speed of light plus, you know, 2 miles an hour? No, that's nonsensical. You're starting with that and slowing down. It's the same as saying, why can't I go to 91 degrees north? That's nonsensical, right? Unit motion is the starting point. And everything is slowed down from that. Okay? You know, and to think of that literally, that foundational motion is this reality pressure, you know, of absolute into co-absoluteness, you know, driving it outward in a motion. And so, you know, see, in that sense, see the aisle being the source. All right. What else do they say?
Passive and potential force becomes active and primordial in response to the resistance afforded by the space presence of the primary eventuated master force organizers. Force is now emerging from the exclusive domain of the unqualified absolute into the realms of multiple response. Response to certain primal motions initiated by the God of action, and thereupon to certain compensating motions emanating from the universal absolute. Primordial force is seemingly reactive to transcendental causation in proportion to absoluteness. Primordial force is sometimes spoken of as pure energy on Universa. Pure energy. On Universa, we refer to it as segregata.
Okay. All right, so most of that paragraph, you know, we've already been kind of saying. See, there, you can see how I've, you know, kind of jumped the gun. I've taken all their hints and put it together here already. Right. But you can see how they were suggesting what we've just unpacked, you know, a little bit more there. Notice the one thing they bring in, you know, thinking of it going from passive and potential force becomes active and primordial, you know, active. You know, that bit about thinking of the root source of motion as being the God of action. You know, behind things becoming active. You know, if not fully an action, like we mentioned way up in the first paragraph there, but active, tending to action. Right, so we've got that. And so remember also way back in the earlier part of the book, they, you know, you can think of it in that root sense as the conjoined actor, the God of action, as being the individual or the fact that initiates motion in space. Okay, the motion in space, like we're starting to talk about here. Now, the motion of space, the respiration motion of space itself, they're saying, well, we don't really know. Now, like I was just pointing out, see, logically, you can see a definitive closeness of that respiration of space to the co-infinite one, to the Paradise Trinity. But remember, always, that fundamental linkage in all that manifests between the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity. You know, as we've talked about throughout the entire first part of the book, that's always what's behind. That coupling between the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity is always there. So, you know, it's kind of just a question about whether or not you want to, you know, literally put one face of the twofold system forward, you know. You want to put the infinite spirit face forward and the Paradise Trinity in the background. You want to put the Paradise Trinity forward and in. You know, they're actually both there. But which is, you know, kind of the most immediate way to think about what's manifesting. You know, if it's the master spirits, you'd want to think about the infinite spirit being the one that's really, you know, where they're directly coming from. But the Paradise Trinity is behind that, you know, is involved in that. You know, neither of them can do any of these things by themselves. They're doing it together, you know, as a fundamental twofold source system. Yep.
Second paragraph, passive and potential force.
Mm-hmm.
This sentence strikes me as being upside down or backwards, or because it's saying it's passive and potential becomes active and primordial in response to the resistance. Well, if something's passive, how do you resist it? Does resisting it make it active?
They're a catalytic agent. They're not acting as a person. That's why they're if they're affecting things, any of these power beings, if they're affecting things in a passive mode, see, they're not doing it, you know, in an active mode as a person acting. Just, you know, it passes through their being, their body, and is catalyzed. You know, so literally, the absolute passes through, not their hands. They're not manipulating it with tweezers and stuff and turning it into absolutus. I mean, it's literally going through their body. And their body is a catalytic influence, you know, that in a sense sort of splits it out, like we were describing, into a co-absolute and an absonite, you know, twofold expression. Okay, see, it's, you know, so you're going from the passive just that passive and potential absolute coming in, you know, to this fully, like I said, you know, things are astir, you know, the vaults of heaven are astir here. And that's why you bring in the God of action, you know, in that picture, you know, like the beginning of the book of Genesis, you know, where they're literally telling you that the spirit of the Trinity, you know, the infinite spirit, the God of action, you know, is setting things astir. All right, so that's the idea that's in play. And besides the kind of initiating primary motions of the God of action, when you're thinking of it like that, the compensating, certain compensating motions emanating from the universal absolute, you're going, well, wait a minute, I thought the universal absolute was a reservoir of the potential for mind energy. We're not talking about mind here, are we? No, we're not. We're talking about the universal absolute is a reservoir of potential of a number of different differentials. I mean, in the real just kind of substance-like mode, you know, that potential is for mind energy. But here it's more in the mode, for those of you who are in Trinity, Triunity, and Triodity, the presentation we're doing, we were talking about this mode with the universal absolute there and understanding the Triunities. Bringing energy into cosmic action, okay? Not just action relative to the God of action, but cosmic action. You know, the harmonizing universe action, you know, all of the complexity of you know, harmonizing, bringing a whole system together that involves all kinds of compensations of differentials and all that. See, the potential for all of that, sorting it out into a harmonized system, that potential is inherent in the universal absolute also. It's another way you can think of it as a reservoir for all of that detail, right? So that's what they're invoking there. Energy being not just actualized, but brought into cosmic action, harmonizing universe action. Yeah, just, you can't understand the logic of that with just the God of action. You've got something now that can't come out of him. You know, so there had to be a reservoir for that to come from. And that reservoir is the universal absolute. Okay, and then when they say primordial force is seemingly reactive to transcendental causation in proportion to absoluteness, what they mean is, think of a whole gradually spectrum here, where the more absolute the force organizers are functioning, the bigger scale, you know, the manifestation is. You know, seemingly reactive to transcendental, you know, remember it's absonite, it's transcendental causation, they're the eventuated master force organizers. See, we're talking about absonite here. So in that transcendental causation domain, that absonite domain, you know, there's the absonite that's up close to the absolute and the absonite that's down close to the finite, right? And where you are in that spectrum is going to dictate how large scale, you know, this phenomenon is going to be. Is it going to be down there close to the finite where you're getting into little details like ultimatons? Or is it going to be up there closer to the absonite boundary and it's going to be grand whirls in the force charge? Okay, that's what they're saying. And everything in between. Now, there's a whole, they're just trying to give you this, it's proportional, see? So it's, you know, you can just imagine turning a knob and having a whole spectrum of stuff focalizing from, you know, the initial scale is the force charge equally pervades all of space. And then you think of focalizing that down smaller and smaller and smaller the closer you get to the absonite, yeah, in a proportional way, okay? Okay, that's what they're talking about. Okay, and then...
closer and closer you get to the finite.
Finite, is that, did I say?
You said absonite.
Oh, okay, the closer and closer you get to the finite, yeah, with that absonite phenomenon. Okay, I'm sorry. Primordial force is sometimes spoken of as pure energy. Remember, we've said this before. Whose personal ministry is pure spirit and pure energy? You know, and they're one and the same thing. The four father fragments, you turn them around and you have the force charge of space. This pure energy, pure spirit ministry is whose ministry? I mean, where do the thought adjusters come from? The Father, right? Don't be bashful. Just say the obvious. Okay. Remember, we're going in parallel around the infinite eternal ellipse here. If the space potency was parallel to the second level domain, this primordial force better be parallel to the third functional level domain because we're going eternity-wise. Who's there? The universal Father, right? It's his personal ministry. Yeah, see, we're parallel. Okay. So definitely we've gone from second functional level to the third. We're going eternity-wise. Okay, and then they say, again, that Agnus Versa, they speak Latin. Agnus Versa, we refer to it as segregata. Okay, again, you've got a past participle. You have segregatus, segregata, segregatum. You know that the masculine segregatus is what becomes the English adjective. You know that you say this is a segregate fact. Okay, that's actually tied directly to segregatus, the masculine. So here they're using the feminine again. This, they want to point out there's something that is inherently the embodiment of segregation. Right? What, you know, we have this co-absolute that's now been segregated from the absoluteness of the aisle. You know, we have this differential. You know, and the force charge is the embodiment, you know, that super additive consequence of the two co-absolutes in relationship. You see, it's inherently, you know, using the feminine, the A suffix, it's inherently this segregation of co-absoluteness from absoluteness, differential relative to the aisle. It's segregata. Okay. All right, now let's go to emergent energies.
Number three, emergent energies. The passive presence of the primary force organizers is sufficient to transform space potency into primordial force, and it is upon such an activated space field that these same force organizers begin their initial and active operations. Primordial force is destined to pass through two distinct phases of transmutation in the realms of energy manifestation before appearing as universe power. These two levels of emerging energy are...
Okay, so before we go into the two, just notice the one little thing. Okay, so they tell you in there that it is upon such an activated space field that these same force organizers begin their initial and active operations. Okay, like I said, see, like they tell you directly there. Initially, they're passive in going from absoluta to what we were just, you know, describing. Okay, now they're active as technically super personalities. You know, they're absonite beings. Okay, so they are doing the active thing, like that god of action. Okay, so keep going around the infinite eternal ellipse. Okay, we just had primordial force parallel to the third functional level domain. So if we go eternity-wise, counterclockwise here one notch, we are parallel to the fourth functional level domain. You know, what's there? Well, the spirit, the infinite spirit, the god of action. See? Active operations. Okay? Emergent energy is there with the god of action. You know, and all those that are, you know, serving in the god of action's stead. Right? The infinite spirit, you know. God the spirit. Right? However you want to look at it. So you've gone from the Father, you know, obviously the Son is in the background of this. We're talking about physical things, and he's, you know, purely spirit. So you're going from the Father, from the first source and center to the third source and center as we're going around. As you go from primordial force to emergent energy. Okay, so what are these two different, you know, modes of expression here?
A, puissant energy. This is the powerful directional mass movemented, mighty tensioned, and forcible reacting energy. Gigantic energy systems set in motion by the activities of the primary force organizers. This primary and puissant...
Or puissant energy.
...is not at first definitely responsive to the paradise gravity pull, though probably yielding an aggregate mass or space directional response to the collective group of absolute influences operative from the nether side of paradise. When energy emerges to the level of initial response to the circular and absolute gravity grasp of paradise, the primary force organizers give way to the functioning of their secondary associates.
Okay, so you don't have two discrete things. Again, remember I stressed that they have this gradually spectrum that we're actually going through here. It starts out with just the primordial force, so the force charge of space, and they begin this coalescing, focalizing, whatever word you want to use, process that is mysterious even to the revelators. You know, it begin a whirl in the force charge, you know, begins to form and condense. Okay? We now have even more differential. I mean, the whirl is here and not over there. Right? So you have even an even more tangible energy, an even more tangible differential, you know, between them adding this additional motion that is the whirl in the force charge, and where the world isn't, okay? And, you know, and there's going to be some boundary to that. You know, and that's, we're starting up, you know, a nebula, you know, a spiral nebula, you know, and eventually when there's matter in that, you know, the ultimatons are coupled to the force charge. That means they're coupled to this world. It means that all that stuff is going in that world, and that world's like a record platter, you know, and until that, there's enough mass that it starts to take on Keplerian orbits. You know, the solar system doesn't, you know, all the planets don't go around like a record platter. You know, Mercury's zipping around, you know, and Pluto's chugging along, right? It's not turning like a record platter. But initially in a galaxy can have a huge bar, you know, and that bar rotates like a record platter. You know, it doesn't shear off into a spiral because of differential rotation. Okay, Because the dominant motion is the whirl, the record platter motion. Okay, that's what we're talking about setting up, is those whirls. Okay, and it's the same primary eventuated master force organizers that are taking it, you know, continuing to work with it now actively instead of passively, taking it all the way down to kind of, you know, you're kind of picturing sort of maybe halfway from the absolute down towards the finite. You know, they let go and then their associates take over and take it the rest of the way, you know, the other half of the way from the middle of the absolute down to the finite, and down to those initial manifestations that have a direct finite expression. And as you're doing that, I mean, there are flows, you know, for instance, the counterclockwise flow in the super universe level, you know, and an automaton follows that quote-unquote circular absolute gravity. They're pointing out, you know, it starts out where you're not wanting to think of individualities of force charge going around like that, because there is no individualities of the force charge. It's a continuum, okay? And then you're coalescing, and, you know, there's a transition where it starts to, at least in an aggregate sense, starts to go with the flow around, okay, in the various levels, whether it's first outer space level going clockwise or, you know, super universe level going counterclockwise. Okay, so that's what they're referring to, is just that we're slowly coalescing, and more it's starting to respond to that going around the center of all things influence of the aisle through the dark gravity bodies. Yep.
Yeah, you know, we're starting out with some very unity-like, and we're slowly getting individuality.
Yes. Exactly. For those in the webinar, he's just stating the big picture there. See, what we're doing is we're individuating. We're starting with something that, from our perspective, seems like unity, and it even has the unit motion, and going to individuality. We're individuating. We want to get to matter, the substance that literally, definitively expresses individuality as a substance, like spirit expresses unity as a substance. Matter expresses individuality, and we're going through this coalescing, focalizing, condensing, whatever word you want to use, individuating process, and it's a very long, gradual process of stages. Okay, so that the primaries do that, and then they hand it over to their associates.
B, gravity energy. The now appearing gravity responding energy carries the potential of universe power and becomes the active ancestor of all universe matter. This secondary or gravity energy is the product of the energy elaboration resulting from the pressure presence and the tension trends set up by the associate transcendental master force organizers. In response to the work of these force manipulators, space energy rapidly passes from the puissant to the gravity stage, thus becoming directly responsive to the circular grasp of paradise, absolute gravity. While disclosing a certain potential for sensitivity to the linear gravity pull inherent in the soon appearing material mass of the electronic and the post-electronic stages of energy and matter. Upon the appearance of gravity response, the associate master force organizers may retire from the energy cyclones of space, provided the universe power directors are assignable to that field of action.
Okay, long paragraph. And as you started reading, I forgot to just explain, what do they mean by puissant? What's puissant energy? A good way to define it is right there. When they say, you know, so you go back there to puissant energy, this is the powerful directional. That's a really good way to define puissant, powerful directional. I mean, it at its root, it means power, okay? See, and they're using that puissant energy, you know, as, you know, we are very much have a phenomenon that's directed towards what we're heading for, the purposed energy, power. See, so it's powerful directional, it's puissant. This first differential from the ubiquitous force charge, you know, towards the goal of power. Yeah. Okay, so that's, I mean, if you look up puissant, you'll see that that definition is actually probably better than your dictionary gives. The Revelators kind of actually wanted to define it well, so they did it right in context there. Powerful directional. Okay, so then the associate transcendental master force organizers, and see, they call them transcendental instead of eventuated because they want to remind you they're more, you know, if you think about transcending the finite upward into the absonite, you know, that lower half of the absonite, if you will, is kind of the immediately transcendental domain. But if you imagine a being, you know, brought into existence and functioning way above that finite absonite boundary, you know, you want to kind of emphasize that by saying, you know, he's eventuated. I mean, the associates are eventuated too, technically, see, but they're using that contrast to just kind of split the absonite into two halves, and one's working the upper half and the other's working the lower half. And so the associate ones are taking that whirl and continuing the coalescing process until they coalesce that whirl into automatons. Okay? And that's where they let go. Once they've coalesced the whirl into automatons, eventually there is no whirl. The whirl all gets condensed into automatons. Okay, that's the process. And then you have automatons, you know, forming into electronic level particles and atoms and whatnot, and those atoms are in gravity motion and whatnot. You know, eventually, you know, you have a galaxy that, you know, is has a spiral character from the center all the way out. There's no sign of the record platter, at least initially visually. If you study it in detail, you notice it doesn't behave the change of velocity with distance from the center that you would expect if they were all just in Keplerian motion, you know, basic Newtonian gravity motion about a center of mass. They're going faster than they should be far out because they've got, part of their motion is a record platter. And part of it is just the gravitational orbit about a center of mass. Okay. But that's the process. You're just coalescing these down, this whirl from puissant energy down to gravity energy. Since gravity energy, because now once you have an automaton, that very definitively as an individual fact now, you know, is going to go around the center of all things. Okay. Hence the name gravity energy. I think that's, all of it is basically there. You know, and obviously the closer you get towards having particles, you know, 100 collections of 100 automatons, the closer you're getting to actually having linear gravity, see, like they're suggesting, you know. So you just have this gradual transition. The last thing. Remember that that last bit at the end, you know, the associate force organizers will retire if you're in the super universe level and the power beings can take over. But the power beings aren't functioning out in the outer space levels. And so the associates stay on. And so every galaxy, you know, that you see in a telescope picture out in the outer space levels there, there's a collection of associate transcendental master force organizers living in that whirl, abiding with it, tending it, continuing the process of coalescing whirl into automatons. Who knows when that will change. Maybe not until the grand universe is settled in light and life. Will there be some sort of power beings out there starting to do elaboration upon that foundation? Okay, so that's what they're referring to there at the end. Okay, give us that last little tidbit.
We are quite uncertain regarding the exact causes of the early stages of force evolution, but we recognize the intelligent action of the ultimate in both levels of emergent energy manifestation, puissant, and gravity energies when regarded collectively are spoken of on Uversa as ultimata.
Mm-hmm. Ultimata. There they go speaking Latin again. They don't understand all of these transcendental things. They're just finite beings. And no one's explained it to them because, of course, they couldn't. Okay, now why together do they call it ultimata? It's an absonite phenomenon. You know, what's the overarching fact of the absonite, the ultimate? Right. So, you know, as they observe that absonite phenomenon, they can see that overarching influence of the ultimate. You know, we recognize the intelligent action of the ultimate. And so, like I said, I mean, we're taking it to automatons. Automatons are the definitive expression, fully individuated ultimata. Okay, and again, you have the masculine, feminine, neuter, past Latin past participles. You have ultimatus, ultimata, ultimatum. Well, you know, in English we use ultimatum, and you know, we use the neuter. So here they're just using the feminine. Again, you know, it's inherently related to the ultimate. It's not directed to the ultimate. It's inherently of the ultimate. And that's why they're not using the masculine, the ultimatus. But like I said, I mean, every time you see the word ultimate, like you just did in the sentence there, the word ultimate in the book, you know, that's actually the English for ultimatus, you know, that Latin past participle, adjective. Okay. See, so there, you know, you can see what they're doing. They're utilizing some of the potentiality in Latin that didn't really get used. I mean, you always have these three different forms, and a lot of times they just use the one, and they didn't use the other two. You know, the Latins. But the revelators go, oh, that's great. We can use the other two. Now, let's use moda, for instance, you know, instead of just modus. And you know, let's use ultimata, et cetera. All right.
4, universe power. Space force has been changed into space energy and thence into the energy of gravity control. Thus has physical energy been ripened to that point where it can be directed into channels of power and made to serve the manifold purposes of the universe creators. This work is carried on by the versatile directors, centers, and controllers of physical energy in the grand universe, the organized and inhabited creations. These universe power directors assume the more or less complete control of 21 of the 30 phases of energy constituting the present energy system of the 7 super universes. This domain of power energy matter is the realm of the intelligent activities of the sevenfold, functioning under the time-space overcontrol of the Supreme. On Universa, we refer to the realm of universe power as Gravita.
Okay, so you can see, like, when they do the triple hyphenated construct there, power, energy, matter. You know, another way of just, you know, saying purposed energy, matter. And you see it directly in there. You know, I mean, is it a correct interpretation that power is purposed energy? What did they say? It can be directed into channels of power and made to serve the manifold purposes, right, of the universe creator, creators. Yes. Power is purposed energy. So we've just ripened it all the way. And you know, in the fullness of universe power, we're talking about atoms and molecules and, you know, mass. Full-on material stuff. Purposed energy. An oxygen atom is purposed energy. It's power. You know, and it's trivially obvious that it's purposed energy. If you think about how you use it every day, you know, it's purposed so that creatures can respirate. You know, every atom is purposed. You know, it serves a distinct purpose, and that purpose relates to life, because the only reason anything exists, the universe exists, to be inhabited. Right? All those atoms are purposed relative to you and all other creatures. Right? The purpose of the creators. The other little thing that, remember, it doesn't seem like it's that complicated when you just say primordial force, emergent energy, universe power. But remember, as we're going from primordial force to universe power, all of this incredible complexity is coming in. You have ten different forms of physical energy, and you have the three-dimensionality of the absonite, which is projected down into the three-dimensionality of the finite. So you have 30, 10 times 3, and, you know, remember when we talked about the power beings, you know, they have a lot of control over the 7 of the 10, and hence 7 times 3, 21 of the 30. All right, so all of that incredible complexity is involved, you know, with, you know, you don't just have automatons and you make them into collections of 100. I mean, there's this 30-foldness involved. It's very complicated and, you know, incomprehensible at this point how you understand all this. But that's all in play in this purposing. There's lots of variability for purposing in all kinds of different ways with that many knobs that you can turn. Okay. We're going, you know, eternity-wise, we were parallel to the fourth functional level with emergent energy. We better be parallel, with the fifth functional level in this one. They say right there towards the end, is the realm of the intelligent activities of the sevenfold. They don't even say God the sevenfold. They say the facet of deity, the sevenfold. Which functional level is the facet of deity called the sevenfold in? The fifth functional level. Yep, see, we're going around the ellipse. Now we're parallel to the fifth functional level. Now we're where, you know, the sevenfold, creature-identified deity. This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where the purposing is applied for creatures, right? The fifth functional level domain where deity engages you, okay, in the context of purposed energy. Okay, see, so that one's just like right there in print, okay? That's your parallel to the fifth functional level. Okay, now here, they're playing a little bit. You know, they've got this scheme going where they're using the a suffix past participle. Now, in Latin, you know, you have gravitas, weight, okay? See, then just they're playing off that. You have gravita, so because they want to have a sequence of parallel terms here. You know, because now we're at, you know, actual mass, the gravitas, weight. You know, they're talking about now, but don't, you know, think of it more innate, you know, more inherent. So let's use the that Latin feminine, you know, pattern that we're doing here, the inherent one, gravita. Okay, let's keep going.
Number 5, Havona energy. In concept, this narrative has been moving paradise word, as transmuting space force has been followed, level by level, to the working level of the energy power of the universes of time and space. Continuing paradise word, there is next encountered a pre-existent phase of energy which is characteristic of the central universe. Here the evolutionary cycle seems to turn back upon itself. Energy power now seems to begin to swing back towards force, but force of a nature very unlike that of space, potency, and primordial force. Havona energy systems are not dual, they are triune. This is the existential energy domain of the conjoint actor, functioning in behalf of the Paradise Trinity. On Uversa, these energies of Havona are known as Triada.
Okay. So let's just deal with, I mean, you know, if we're continuing around, we should be parallel to the sixth functional level here, the supreme level. It's like, well, how do I understand that? Well, just, it's one of the things that we talk about when we go through this in the Total Deity Seminar, but just to make a long story short, remember how in, you know, they often speak of there being some sort of a pre-existent presence of the Supreme Being in Havona? Technically, that is the Supreme Spirit, both S's capitalized. You know, it's just a spirit presence, it's not a personal presence, okay? You know, that the personal and spirit and nature of the Supreme Being comes from where? From the Paradise Trinity. Right. This, you know, that's, you know, it's a little subtler because we're dealing with a pre-existent thing. We're dealing with more, you know, eternity issues here. But that's the way you understand how it's parallel there. And you see how they bring in, you know, in the individuality viewpoint, initially you're thinking of the conjoint actor, like we've been saying, but you notice he functioning in behalf of the Paradise Trinity, right? That coupling of the two. To pronounce this, I guess I would start with triad, you know, and so you'd go triada. I mean, that would be my first attempt to pronounce it, I guess. But, you know, see that, and again, they're playing with, they want an A, you know, a parallel A ending one here that they've sort of just constructed. But, you know, you have this stuff that's inherently an expression of the threefoldness of the Paradise Trinity. Right? You know, the pattern universe, all this other stuff we've been talking about out here in the super universe level, right, is modeled after that pattern in the pattern universe. Yeah. So is it not the case that the Paradise Trinity is actually behind all of this that we've been talking about? See, they're basically telling you right there, right? All these actors are acting in behalf of the Paradise Trinity, the co-infinite one at the center of this whole phenomenon. Right? So, you know, this is all about the Paradise Trinity. Okay, and this is where you finally kind of get that directly. We talked before about that issue that the kind of energy that we experience is dual. And so if you're going to have a valid physics, it has to be very immediate. You know, how you understand what a particle is, an elementary particle, you better be able to see that it's fundamentally twofold in some way to match up what they're saying. Okay. That's just a detail they're reminding you of here again. Let's see. You notice at the beginning there, level by level, they say, right, the functional levels of total deity, right? They're stating it directly there. That's what we're in parallel to here. Now, the other little thing they're throwing in concept at the beginning there, in concept, this narrative has been moving paradise word as transmuting, etc. Okay, paradise word. Now, we've been thinking eternity-wise, and we're kind of going from the Paradise Trinity. That's more literally. See, in concept, this narrative. Okay, they're giving you another way of thinking about this. At the center of all things, you have those pre-existent existentials. You know, and if you imagine going way out to the far reaches of the fourth outer space level, you know, we're just going to have the beginnings of something, you know, and the more you move in, the more you move towards this paradise at the center, the more you move paradise word like that, the more it's going to go from primordial force to emergent energy to universe power. I mean, not literally, you know, but see, figuratively, you know, you're going from potential to actual. Okay. See, so that's what they're doing there, is they're saying, instead of thinking about this literally going around the infinite eternal ellipse, think about how, you know, in concept, it's almost like you've started way out far away and you're moving inward geographically, okay, in concept, you know? And so as you're passing through the universe power where the people are in the super universe level, that purposed energy, purposed for people, and you continue inward where, you know, you get to the central universe. And if you go even further inward, you're going to get to the aisle. Right, see, so that's what I'm saying. In concept, you can think of it actually as that you're going radially inward, you know, in the geometry. Right? Okay. See, so that they flipped it like that so that you can continue to see the sequence of it. All right, so yeah, so triada is what we have there in Havona.
6, transcendental energy. This energy system operates on and from the upper level of paradise and only in connection with the Absonite peoples. On Uversa, it is denominated Trinasta.
Trinasta, yep. Okay, so just that little blurb, because obviously, what can you tell us about things that are definitively Absonite? Not much. Okay, but, you know, it's obvious that's where we have to go if we're continuing around the ellipse here. After the supreme level is the ultimate level, transcendental, right? Okay, so, yeah, we're parallel with the seventh functional level with transcendental energy. And
it's number six.
You notice that they point out that it's related to the upper level, not just, you know, we're not just talking about nether paradise. Right, when you get into the Absonite, you're beyond power personality synthesis, even. You're definitely beyond power on the one side, personality on the other side, the upper surface on in one sense and the nether surface in the other. See, the fact that you have power on the personal side, I see they're reminding you of how you have an Absonite blending of the two. The transcendentalers, the Absonite peoples, like the architects of the Master Universe, for instance, you know, that are there. Okay, and why do they call it Trinasta? Well, obviously, the ending, keeping the sequence going here. Tran, okay, they're just taking off the transcendental, the over idea. What's the OS? OS is Latin for bone. Os. Like ossify, right? They're wanting to indicate that, you're getting something that's like bone hard. We're heading towards absolutum here, right? Yeah. Okay, something that's seriously rock solid, okay? Okay, but we're not using rock solid. We're using bone solid. Why? We'll see when we read the next one. Why they chose to do it that way. To indicate a hardness, and yet not just like granite or something, or basalt, bone hard.
Okay. 7, Minota. Energy is close of kin to divinity when it is paradise energy. We incline to the belief that Minota is the living non-spirit energy of paradise, an eternity counterpart of the living spirit energy of the original sun, hence the non-spiritual energy system of the universal father.
Okay, let's just take that a little bit. So living non-spirit energy. Remember how, you're going to experience something that doesn't seem very blob-like, like you think of matter, when you actually study the matter that the isle is made out of. It's described as a quote-unquote living non-spirit energy, living like bone. Yeah. See, we're getting closer to the living non-spirit energy. So they wanted to use a transcendent-made solid substance word that had shades of that living. See, bone. That's why they used bone. Okay, and Minota, okay, mono, and then the TA again, we're keeping this pattern going of this sequence. Mono, because it's a singular kind of matter. There's not 100 different atoms or anything like that. It's a singular construct. Mono means single, right? Single made, singularness of substance, Minota. Then just that last bit.
We cannot differentiate the nature of Paradise Spirit and Paradise Minota. They are apparently alike. They have different names, but you can hardly be told very much about a reality whose spiritual and whose non-spiritual manifestations are distinguishable only by name.
We've talked about that a lot. Another name for Minota is Absolutum. Another name is Paradise Energy. You could call it Paradise Energy. to be directly in parallel with paradise spirit, the stuff that the eternal sun's body is made out of. And you poke the eternal sun's body and you poke the aisle, and the difference in name only. You know, you can't, I mean, you can't figure out what the difference is, because it, you know, you'd have to have absolute perspective to differentiate them. And we're all sub-absolute who are doing the poking here. All right, so that's the point there. I don't think there's anything else. Yeah, let's get into the rest here.
We know that finite creatures can attain the worship experience of the Universal Father through the ministry of God the Sevenfold and the Thought Adjusters, but we doubt that any sub-absolute personality, even power directors, can comprehend the energy infinity of the first great source and center. One thing is certain. If the power directors are conversant with the technique of the metamorphosis of space force, they do not reveal the secret to the rest of us. It is my opinion that they do not fully comprehend the function of the force organizers. These power directors themselves are energy catalyzers. That is, they cause energy to segment, organize, or assemble in a unit formation by their presence. And all this implies that there must be something inherent in energy which causes it thus to function in the presence of these power entities. The Nebadon Melchizedeks long since denominated the phenomenon of the transmutation of cosmic force into universe power as one of the seven infinities of divinity. And that is as far as you will advance on this point during your local universe ascension.
Okay, but yeah, what is that point? Let's unpack a little bit here quickly. See, there's, you know, most of that's straightforward. That's why I just had her read through. I mean, you get it, what they're saying there. See, and they're stressing that they're catalyzers, and they're a catalytic presence. So even when they're acting more directly, and it's what they are that makes it happen, not so much what they do, you know, per se. They're just, remember how they talk about it? It's like, okay, I'm a power being and I want to do such and so with this energy. I just go into the stream and I change my kaleidoscopic nature to this setting, and input turns into desired output, you know, as it passes through my body. Okay? They don't have a toolbox full of wrenches and stuff that they're twisting on it and whatnot. It's just, you know, their body does this. Their presence does it.
Like you were saying, innate, right, of each one of those levels.
Yeah, and see, you know, it's innate in them, and the innateness of, you know, the inherent nature of all, yeah, how they're describing all of these different forms of energy. And you see how it's, yeah, commensurate, like you're saying. What was that?
They're beings.
Yeah, they are beings. Well, I mean, of course, you know, some of the so-called power beings aren't persons, you know, but yeah. They have a beingness to them, yeah, this presence. The one little thing there, the quote-unquote infinities of divinity. Let's see, it was back the next to the last paragraph of section one. They used the capital I infinity, the all-embracing grasp of capital I infinity. Remember the functioning of deity on the infinite level? Well, just like you have capital S supremacy, the functioning of deity on the supreme level, you know, in the supreme level and the functional levels here, the divinity of that capital S supremacy is lowercase s supremacy. You know, that's the divinity of capital S supremacy. The divinity of capital I infinity is lowercase I infinity. Infinities of divinity. What they're talking about there is that, you know, fascinating reflection of, on the one hand, you can use lowercase I infinity to indicate the totality of reality, but on the other hand, you flip it around and lowercase I is the divinity of capital I infinity, Which is it? It's both. The Melchizedek's are designating it that way because they're pointing out, you know, there's deep mystery underneath all of this, that on the one hand, it's the totality of reality, and on the other hand, it's the divinity of the functioning of deity on the infinite level. You know, and these doings are the infinities of divinity, right? See, an infinity of divinity is, you know, is that divinity of capital I infinity. So you can see that the, you know, there is enough in the book where you can eventually unpack what I just said about what lowercase I infinity means, but you've got to, you know, notice little things in passing like that. And, okay, so that's what's going on there. Now, your intrigue is one of the seven? What are the other six infinities of divinity? I guess we'll have to wait for our local universe career. All right, let's wrap it up.
Notwithstanding our inability fully to comprehend the origin, nature, and transmutations of cosmic force, we are fully conversant with all phases of emergent energy behavior, from the times of its direct and unmistakable response to the action of paradise gravity, about the time of the beginning of the function of the super universe power directors.
Right. So once it's measurable, you know, energy, you know, they understand all the details in, you know, exhaustive specificity. Right?
You know, when you, we were talking early on mm-hmm. in the class about this breathing going in mm-hmm. and out, mm-hmm. and that I think you said that no, the revelators don't really know, but I think that they do tell us that there's been, I think, so many cycles of this.
Countless cycles, yeah.
So if there has been, it's surprising or intriguing that no one knows or no one's...
Again, they've watched countless cycles, you know, over trillions and trillions of years. Obviously, a 2 billion year cycle goes around a lot of times. You know, so, you know, they know the specificity of it to 90 decimal places, okay? I mean, they know exactly what it does, but why it does that?
Not a clue.
Yeah, not a clue. You know, they understand the how, the where, the what, you know, but the why, no.
Way above their pay grade.
Right. What's the why behind it? Right. And that's, you know, that's where scientists get, you know, off on a tangent, a false tangent these days. They get all burrowed down in the how, you know, and a lot of them have totally forgotten that there needs to be a why, you know, and some of them now have codified that and saying there is no why, that it's a purposeless universe. It's like, no, there's a why, you know, just because you can get,
they don't have the answer.
You can keep adding decimal places to the how doesn't mean there isn't a why. What's the why? You know, until you address the why, you don't actually have science. You just have analysis, you know, and data collection, right? Right. So the respiration, you know, see, can never, you know, you can never take that very far. It's just a given, you know, to a degree, even for high beings. You know, and is it not absurd then that lowly humans think they can explain the expansion that they see? You know, they don't know it's a respiration, but they think they can explain that in full detail. It's like, no, that's not explainable. That's a mystery that not even high beings know the source of, the why of.
Of the Big Bang, Chris.
Right. Okay. All right, we're way over time here. Let's wrap it up. I told you it would be kind of tough to fit this section into 2 hours. And we'll, you know, that's the template. So we'll touch back on it as we go forward. You know, and definitely if there's things you want to have explained more, bring it up, you know, as we go forward and we can expand on it a little bit more. All right, let's take a moment here.